Welcome to The Frenzy.
I'm Melissa Carter.
And I'm Jen Hobby. The Frenzy's mission is to celebrate friendships over 40.
We believe that women can thrive through authentic relationships, self-discovery, and spiritual exploration.
Our decades-long friendship continues to grow because we are willing to go there and share our truths through life's highs and lows.
That's why The Frenzy is here, to hold space for women who are 40 and older, because at this age, your story matters more than ever. I'm Melissa, and I was really good at making fart noises in my armpit as a kid. And it wasn't just the fast ones. I could do slow. I mean, the whole thing. I entertained many with my armpit skills.
I'm Jen, and that F word was a bad word in my house growing up. We had to say toot. I make my girls say the same thing.
You can't say fart.
No. And this morning, my youngest daughter, Reese. My youngest daughter, Reese, was like wiping something on me. And I said, are you using me as a napkin? And she goes, no, I'm rubbing my fart on you. And I was like, Reese, we don't say that in our house. We say toot. And why in the world would you ever want to rub it on me? She just laughed and went off to breakfast.
I was going to say, my son probably would enjoy that, that game.
A match made in
heaven. Really? That's interesting. I have to remember that. So, dude, that is so funny. All right. Coming up on today's episode, we are talking love, partnerships, and equality.
You're about to meet Kirsten Palladino, founder of Equally Wed, the number one source for LGBTQ+ wedding and engagement inspiration. Also, LGBTQ+ inclusive wedding vendors, marriage equality news, and more. And here's the question. Have you subscribed to the Frenzy podcast yet? Please do. And leave us a review. It really helps us out. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to podcasts.
And if you enjoy this episode of The Frenzy, please share it with a friend. We would love for more women like you to find out about our show. Jen Hobby and I are going to dive into your thoughts on love, partnership, and equality here in just a minute. But first, let's thank our sponsors.
Just heard your friend, neighbor, or colleague has been diagnosed with cancer? Your first instinct is, what can I do? Kick It Pajamas is the answer. Kick It sells pajamas, gowns, and other accessories specifically designed for those going through cancer treatment. Go to kickitpajamas.com and use the code FRENZY to get 10% off. That's kickitpajamas.com, code FRENZY for 10% off. Give the gift of comfort and style. Kick It Pajamas. Let's kick cancer off the planet.
Hey, it's Melissa. My family has a history of vascular disease, so I make a point to get my vascular system checked through Lifeline screening each year. The health of your arteries is important, and it's critical to understand your risk of stroke and cardiovascular disease. With a simple preventative screening, I get peace of mind or early detection so that I can take action. Since 1993, Lifeline Screening's highly experienced staff has screened over 10 million people in order to bring awareness to potential health problems for follow-up with your physician. To find out more, go to lifelinescreening.com. That's lifelinescreening.com, and be sure to use the code FRIENDS. That's frenzy without the Y, so that's FRIENDZ. All right, so one of the things, Jen Hobby, I have noticed during the Olympics that I'm very excited about is the fact that, number one, there's more out athletes that have participated in the Olympics, more LGBTQ+. Plus, there are some cute stories that I thought I'd share from our Olympics that we now have to say goodbye to. I'm going to go through a withdrawal. But there were two couples that I don't know if a lot of people knew were couples. Lesbian couples. And one was Sue Bird, who went to UConn. I went to Tennessee, so I hate UConn, but it's okay. Sue Bird came from UConn. That's fine. But she is a phenomenal WNBA player. She is one of the best in the sport. She participated in basketball in the Olympics, and she is engaged to Megan Rapinoe. I always say her name wrong. Megan Rapinoe. And she, of course,
I did not know that
this soccer player
that
had the purple hair. Yes,
because I like watching soccer. I'm not as diehard of a basketball fan, but that's so cute.
And Sue Bird was one of our flag bearers in the opening ceremony.
Okay, yeah.
And what I thought was sweet was NBC because of COVID, all the athletes were like coming in buses only until they were led into the stadium. So they couldn't be there like ahead of time. So you had Sue Bird, who was getting ready for the flag bearing. And then NBC was interviewing, you know, Megan about her fiance being the flag bearer, what it meant and what it was like, and them being able to be together for the Olympics. And they treated them just like they would treat any straight couple.
Yes.
And so that's one of the things that I found that was different. It wasn't lost upon me. And I was very appreciative, as I always am, understanding, at least being old enough for me to know that that was a dream of mine as a kid, for, you know, broadcasters to actually show a lesbian couple in a loving way, in a wonderful way. And it came true. And then the other couple that I don't have their names in front of me, but it was a sweet story of, okay, how are these women going to handle this? There was a, again, engaged couple, two women, one played for the U.S. softball team and one played for the Mexican softball team.
Oh, and so they had to compete against each other.
They had to compete against each other.
Oh no.
Yes.
It's so tough.
And one of them won a medal and one of them didn't. So to me, it's like, oh, that's hard. But that was another, but that was one of those stories that again was covered as if, oh, this is so cute. What's going to happen? How is this going to be? And it wasn't displayed in an odd or even apologetic way. It was just like, here's a couple in the Olympics that have to compete with each other. So I was just really thrilled that the attention that was brought upon the LGBT plus community at the Olympics was just really refreshing. And it was really exciting for me.
Well, representation matters. Mm-hmm. Being able to see couples in the public eye matters. Media coverage matters, so that you're getting to see couples just living their lives, and they're doing extraordinary things by being in the Olympics. But the coverage is not just because they were at a pride parade, right? The coverage isn't just because this is a time we are supposed to be celebrating LGBTQ plus couples. This is just, hey, here is a lesbian couple at the Olympics, and this is a cute romance story. Let us tell you about it.
Right.
And I love that it's woven into the fabric of our culture. Mm-hmm. It's so helpful, I think, for our future.
And it's exciting for me, because I think a lot of times when people talk about LGBT, it's always gay men that are represented, as they should be. But I knew that I used to be frustrated, because even when magazines, and I can't think of which magazine it was in particular, but like for Pride Month, there are some mainstream magazines that will have these photo spreads of LGBT. And there was one time that there was a magazine that only had men in the spread
the whole time.
And it's like, that's great if you're having a gay men celebration, but if you're talking about Pride, there's a lot of letters in there. And if you're going to do true representation, you have to represent everybody that celebrates Pride. And so I feel like there are many times, as we talk about, you know, women not getting the spotlight that men get. Well, that's no different in the gay community. There's a lot of times that lesbians don't get the same attention that gay men get. And I think it's also a beauty standard. I think that, you know, there's a lot of stereotypical lesbians out there that people see with the short hair and the no makeup, and they're more masculine in their dressing and in their demeanors. And that's what you think about when you think lesbian. But that, of course, is not the case with all the lesbians in the community. It's just those are the ones that tend to stand out for a lot of people. And sometimes those are the ones that are more outspoken for a lot of people. But still, I think when you have the gay men who are very put together, the ones that you see, again, stereotypical gay man who's very stylish, put together, has a beauty standard, that's when you lean more toward covering the gay men than the lesbians. And so, you know, there's still ways to go when it comes to representing the gay community. But I really was thrilled that during the Olympics, it was not something I was seeking out, but it was something that just happened. And I thought, this is so neat. Because
that's
again,
awesome.
Yeah, it's like you said, it wasn't Pride Month. It wasn't anything. It was just, hey, we have these two superstar athletes that are engaged. They just happen to be two women. And it was just really neat to watch. Really neat
and
to watch.
As we think about equality, and get ready to talk to Kirsten Palladino, founder of Equally Wed, I wanted to ask you about your own thoughts on gay marriage and how that's evolved over time. Because during our friendship, I know you've had some pretty strong opinions about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, gay marriage has only been, you know, legal recently, right, in the past few years. And first of all, I'm not married, for those who are new to the show, and I've never been married. I've been in serious relationships. The most serious relationship has been with the parent of my son, the other parent of my son. And we talked about marriage when we were together, but it was not legal at the time. And neither one of us wanted to participate in something that wasn't legal. So we never had a commitment ceremony. We never wanted to have a commitment ceremony. What we did is we lived together, and neither one of us had ever lived with anybody. So, you know, for me and for her, living together was the equivalent of getting married, because that was the big, you know, what is the biggest commitment you can have if you didn't have the right to get married? And that was living together. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. But prior to that, when I was suffering from kidney failure and I had to do a hospital stay for a surgery that was prepping me for what was eventually going to be my transplant surgery. During the transplant, I was on the transplant floor. I had specialty doctors. They were very supportive of me and my girlfriend and at the time. And, you know, but when I had those pre-surgeries, I was on the general hospital floor. And that I had to tell the hospital staff that my girlfriend was my sister so that she could spend the night in the hospital room with me.
Wow.
And because
otherwise they would not have let her.
They would not have let her, because only spouses, you know, or immediate family were allowed to spend the night in the hospital room. And so because my family was not there, because my family didn't live, I was in Atlanta, my family lived in Nashville, and she was my girlfriend going through this with me. I didn't want to be alone, and it was a very vulnerable time. Mm-hmm. And so back then, yes, there was no gay marriage, so I would never have been able to have a spouse to stay with me. And so we lied and said she was my sister. And like I said, when I got to be on the transplant unit and transplant ward, that was totally different. I didn't have to make excuses, but that has changed. And then I remember I gave a speech at Kennesaw State University in Georgia years ago about this very issue. And this is before gay marriage was legal. And there was frustration in the audience because I mentioned the fact that I would not do a commitment ceremony and I wouldn't do those things until we had legal marriage. And there was one woman sitting on the front row who challenged me because she was afraid. She was afraid that my being outspoken would cause the gay community to go backwards, that people would be offended enough to where, well, you got your commitment ceremony, what, you know, that we would somehow lose rights if people were fighting for gay marriage. And at that speech, I said, I will never take scraps from the straight table, that I'm not lesser than straight people. And so why should I act like I'm lesser than straight people? And I want the same rights. I pay the same taxes. You know, why shouldn't I have that? And speaking of the taxes, there was one time that Katie and I, who is my baby mama, when we were together, we came up with this plan that I was going to protest gay marriage by not paying my taxes and get in trouble for not paying my taxes, because my taxes went, you know, you're taking the gay taxes, but you won't give us gay marriage. And so I was all, you know, being an advocate about it, making a big deal about it. I was going to be in the papers. I was going to fight the system. And that year I got a refund. And so I wasn't able to. I had paid so many taxes that I got a check from the government and I couldn't even do my protest. So needless to say, things have evolved greatly. I think that
it has. I wanted to mention to you that one of my favorite chapters in Michelle Obama's book, it's called Becoming, is when gay marriage was made legal on June 26, 2015, by the way.
Yeah.
And she talks about how she and her daughter snuck out of the White House without telling the Secret Service because they wanted to see the front of the White House that had been covered in the rainbow colors. Yes. Remember, they shined the rainbow light on the front of the White House that day and people were out front, she said, celebrating and, you know, waving their banners of love wins. And she and her daughter wanted to experience it just like regular people.
That's awesome.
And so they snuck out and were running through the White House trying to get out, but all the doors are locked, right? You have to be like let out of the White House. So she felt like kind of trapped inside, but they somehow found their way out, found an open door and got to go experience that.
That's
I think they later got in trouble by Secret Service for doing that.
Sure,
because
I'm
when
sure.
you're the first lady and the first daughter, you really can't. You're not supposed to do that. But she said it was one of her favorite moments there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was in the car when it was announced and I had to pull over.
Yeah.
And had a really good cry. And I think it was on Peachtree Street. I was somewhere downtown Atlanta and literally pulled over. And it still brings tears because it's the equivalent of being told you're not good enough your entire life. And then somebody finally saying that was all a lie. You were fine the whole time, just as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're good enough. And I just don't, I think it's hard to translate what the lights on the White House being rainbow meant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, and again, you know, we've talked about this before, but the religious system has been one of the biggest weapons that's been used to make gay people feel lesser than. And we're still not where we need to be. There's plenty of church organizations that have reversed that mentality. And they're obviously with gay marriage being legal. There's plenty of churches that have, you know, and celebrate gay marriage. But I think that religion is such a powerful tool for both for good and bad. Mm-hmm. Religion was used as a weapon when it came to interracial marriages. It is used as a weapon when it comes to racism. You know, the sad thing is that people who manipulate that system understand the power it has over people. And so for me, you know, that's the reason that the main reason that most gay people have felt lesser than is because of religion, because you have actually had people tell you that God himself or herself doesn't like you. And you're told that over and over and over again. And now, I mean, I never bought into that and I was not a part of a religious body that really hammered that home. But I know plenty of people that are, and I know people who were over 40, over 50, over 60, over 70 that are still in the closet, and it's based on that philosophy. So I think for, like you said, inclusion matters and gay marriage being legal and people being able to do the same things that their mothers and fathers were able to do, that their sisters and brothers have been able to do, that their straight children will be able to do, just to be able to be a part of the same party that everybody else is in, makes a massive difference in the way that people perceive themselves and the way they treat others. Like, to be inclusive means a better society, because if you make people feel included, they will be better people to themselves and others. Absolutely.
And in what ways can straight women like me be more inclusive? So, you know, we talked about, you know, before you were able to get married, now it is legal. Fast forward to as a mom, you know, of a son who has two moms.
Yeah.
How can somebody like me make you feel more included? Or how can we make sure that we're just being normal?
I think to be normal, I mean, to just whatever you would do for a kid from straight family, do for the kid of the gay family. Don't overthink it. I know that for Katie and I, we've had discussions because during the pandemic, we reached out to several of our son's classmates. And he was in kindergarten at the time. He's about to go into first grade. But during and you know, kindergarten's still an age where you're not really clustered up. I mean, kids are still attached to their parents and then they have a few friends, you know, maybe one or two good friends, but they're not quite paired up with a gang of, you know, lifelong friends yet. So you're still trying to introduce and play around with other parents and, hey, do you want to do a FaceTime? Hey, do you want to do a play date maybe outside? And so we were all trying to also make sure, since Mr. Carter was in remote learning, that, okay, well, let's get together with some kids and let's make sure that we go to a park together or let's FaceTime. And we noticed that there were some families who, even though they were very sweet to us and acted very sweet to us, they never quite could get their child together for a FaceTime or a park visit. Their schedule never quite permitted. And it's like, okay, I get that the first two or three, you know, requests.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're trying for months to get your child and our child to even just talk on FaceTime for 30 minutes, I'm the one that threw the flag up. I'm the one that told Katie, I said, I think they have a problem with us. I think they don't feel comfortable with their child at 5 and 6 years old associating with our child. And so I think that if you are someone who is accepting of the gay community, then you're already doing what you're supposed to do. Like you're being normal.
Right.
If you truly aren't in your soul, then don't waste my time. I will tell you that. Don't smile in my face and talk about me behind my back. Let's just be honest about it. Like, don't, because I don't want you in my life. Like you have this attitude, I'm lesser than. Well, guess what? I think the same about you when it comes to my son. I don't want you around my son. So I think that to be inclusive means just to be normal. Now, I will say the most important thing you can do is not about play dates or hanging out with other people, whatever. It's what you say to your children and grandchildren in private. Mm-hmm. It's when you see people on television and your natural reaction to them on television. I learned more from my parents and their conversations with each other that I overheard and how I framed my world than I ever did by what they said directly to me. So my parents are pretty progressive for their age group, and just hearing them talk. And so if you were saying, derogatory terms for gay people in your house, that's where you need to stop it. If you were bringing up the fact that somebody, like, for instance, if you brought up Mr. Carter in your house and you mentioned, but he's got two moms, like, just by making him seem different because his parents are different, you've already in your child or grandchild's mind made them think, oh, well, he's different. Maybe something's wrong with that.
Yeah. We talked to Lauren and Reese about it because kids will notice that there is a difference, but it's just how you respond to that difference. You know, so when Lauren was in preschool, she was maybe 2 or 3. She had a little buddy in her class. His first name was Carter, and he had two dads. And so she came home and she said, Mom, Carter has two dads. And I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. And she's like, oh, okay. And never brought it up again. No big deal, you know? And then when our girls have hung out with your son, they'll say, Mr. Carter, they use his first name though. They'll say, which I almost
His first name is not Mr.
Yeah.
A lot of people think I actually named him Mr.
But they'll say, oh, Mr. Carter has two moms. And then Lauren will go, yeah, it's kind of like my friend Carter who had two dads. You know, it's like they notice the difference, but it's how you react to that difference or make it no big deal in your world. You're like, yeah, And our thing is everybody's different. You know, they'll see someone with, like, two moms or two dads, everybody's different. They'll see someone with tattoos, everybody's different. Oh, look, that lady has blue hair. That girl dyed her hair pink. Everybody's different.
Right.
And saying that in a way where it's like, it's cool to be different. It's fine. And it's not, because I think
there's nothing wrong with it. Right.
Exactly. I think we can't ignore that our children will acknowledge differences. We just have to embrace differences as a good thing, as a great thing that weaves this fabric of humanity together.
Differences and by doing that,
pull us together, not pull us apart.
And by doing that, you've armed your children with the ability to change other people's opinion in a positive way. So, like Katie and I always wondered, how do we broach this topic with our son? And because we don't want him to, we don't want to make excuses for ourselves to him. So we thought, well, we'll just play it. We'll see. We'll play it as it comes, right? Mm-hmm. As any parent does. So the two instances that have come to mind that happened that pleased us and the fact that we didn't have to say anything was she was with him shopping. And I don't know, there was at some store. And as they pulled, I think it was a grocery store. And as Katie was putting stuff on the belt, and Mr. Carter was young enough to still be in the cart. He looked at the cashier and said, I've got two moms. And the cashier looked at him and said, well, that's great. And then rang her out. And then Katie could not text me fast enough to say, he's figured this out.
Yeah.
Then we were at,
that's so cute. I'm going to tell a stranger this.
And I'm going to let you know. And then we were at, so cute. A school function. It was the end of the year school function last year. And again, because they were remote, they had like this carnival type, field day that the remote kids were invited to, and we allowed them to go because it was outside and And he was sitting with some friends that were not in his class. Like all the kids were just kind of hanging out. And so he was sitting and Katie and I were nearby. And so he was introducing, he's like, oh, that's my mama. And that's my mommy. So Katie is mommy and I'm mama. And so the girl looked at him and she had that look. And I could see, I could feel my defensiveness boil up. Cause I recognize the look. There's a look when people are not approving of something. Mm-hmm. And so this little girl looked at him and said, you've got two moms. How do you have two moms? And he looked at her and he, without missing a beat, said, well, I just have more love in my heart. And that's how I got two moms. And then she was like, okay. And then took a drink and they moved on to different conversations.
They're like, can I have a goldfish? Like whatever. Yes. The important thing of a toddler's day is.
Yes. Wow. And Katie and I were like, where in the world did that? Because literally we have never addressed the issue with him. The only thing I've ever addressed with him, because when he was in school and they learned about Martin Luther King, was that that's how I introduced the differences. Right. So I didn't bring it up because of gay parents. I brought it up because he's in a very diverse school racially. Mm-hmm. And so I brought up the differences and that means nothing. And I said, and then you'll have parents. And then I brought up the parents. I said, you'll have parents that one may be black and one may be white. You may have just a grandparent that's the parent and they don't have mm-hmm. a mom and dad. Like, you know, I said, it doesn't matter as long as, you know, some, as long as you're taken care of and you take care of the people you love, that's all that matters. And so, you know, and that's how I just addressed it. And then we moved on to something else. So it's like, how do you make it normal? Well, you just be normal about it. You just mm-hmm. don't over explain it. Don't overthink it. Just love always wins. We learned that with gay marriage. And that's just mm-hmm. the philosophy of life, that love, regardless of what the situation is, always wins. And teach your child to understand that love is more important than anything else.
Amen. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
And so, you know, much like I talked to Jen when we were working together back in the day about my frustrations about being gay and not having gay marriage. Now we have gay marriage and I still, you know, shout to the rooftops how wonderful it is. I mean, it's a reminder to share your story, right? Because that is my story. Mm-hmm. And I feel, and I've been told, and I hope that sharing my story has changed the lives of others when it comes to this issue. And we feel like you need to open up and share your stories with those that you trust, because your story absolutely matters and can make a difference.
And with that, we are thrilled to introduce you to today's guest, Kirsten Palladino. She is the founder of Equally Wed. It's home for all things LGBTQ+, weddings, engagement, and marriage equality news. So ladies, and maybe a few gentlemen listening, please welcome our trailblazing friend, Kirsten Palladino. Welcome to the Frenzy.
Thank you so much for having me, Jenna Melissa. I'm so excited Yay. To be with y'all.
We Yay. Are pumped for this conversation. Kirsten is a co-founder of Equally Wed and Equally Wed Pro. She's also a writer, author, speaker, editor, educator, course creator. The list that goes ass. On and on. Yes. And she just founded SurvivorLit.org. So we are going to talk to her about all of her things. Kirsten, we're just so excited about this and connecting with you again.
Thank you. It's been so, so great to be invited to be on your podcast. I've, you know, followed both of your careers for so long and it was really, you know, it's cool to reconnect to, having been in your studio so long ago. I think it was actually to talk about Pride Month. So it's really cool to connect with you in June again. So thank you.
I, you know, she's so sweet to say, I follow your careers. Was it a dining room table? I always tell the story. The first time Kirsten and I met, we had a mutual friend and I bought a table from her. Was it a dining room table?
It was a dining room table. Yeah.
Yes. I think I paid $250 for that table. And I wanted to give you a follow up. I don't have the table anymore, but it served me well. So.
Oh my gosh, that's great. And we did it long before, you know, Facebook Marketplace yes. and all yes, of those things.
Exactly.
Like
yes,
the old fashioned way.
The old fashioned way by phone conversations.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
Did you read it in the newspaper, like a little clipping for the garage sale?
I think a post-it note on our friend's fridge. No, I'm just kidding. But that was
really cool.
That was long before any careers. So this is, you know, great that, you know, never burn a bridge, right? Because you never know when you're going to reconnect
or need a table.
Or need a table. Exactly.
Kirsten, awesome. I think we start with Equally Wed, and mm-hmm. I want to know about your personal journey that led you to starting it.
Sure. So I have a wife named Maria, and we have been together since 2004. And in 2008, she proposed to me in Central Park. We live in Atlanta. We flew to New York under the guise of my upcoming 30th birthday. And so she proposed to me, and I'm very excited. And when we came back to Atlanta, we rushed to Barnes & Noble, as one does in 2008. And so I was looking for wedding magazines, wedding books, everything to, could teach me how to plan a wedding, because I didn't have a lot of friends who had gone through the process. So I was really, you know, a beginner. And I took piles home and laid them all out on the dining room table. And what I saw was a pattern of exclusion, that there was no one like me and Maria in those pictures. And it disturbed me, but it also broke my heart. I just didn't understand. I thought this was modern times, and there were, it was sad. And so then, as we went through our wedding planning process, and I did the mental gymnastics of, you know, trying to imagine what Maria and I would look like in pictures like that. Then we started reaching out to wedding vendors here in Atlanta, and people were a variety of reactions, you know, whether they were just outright rude or would send me a Bible verse or just wouldn't return my call, because I'm very upfront that this was a same-sex wedding, you know, like, don't break my heart later. Tell me now, will you work with me or not? And it was really hard. We did eventually find an incredible team of creative professionals to work with us on our wedding. And we had a wonderful wedding in 2009. But the wheels were turning. I am a writer and editor, and my wife is a graphic designer and web developer. So what we decided to do was create something for our community that we didn't have, which was a wedding magazine for LGBTQ plus couples that we celebrate their love, but we also connect them with LGBTQ plus inclusive vendors. So we've been doing that now for 11 years, and it's been just a phenomenal ride. I love it. I love every minute of it. And along the way, I've learned that so many wedding vendors really do want to work with couples like us, but they don't know where to start, or they're not sure they're doing the right thing, or they're pretty sure they're doing the wrong thing, and they want to do better. And so I launched a course called the LGBTQ plus Inclusive Certification Course, which is essentially a deep dive into who we are as an LGBTQ plus community. We're not just skinny white gays and lesbians. We are much more than that. We are, you know, a variety of races and backgrounds and religions and you know, political affiliations, and we all have different world experiences. And we're not all cisgender. You know, some of us are transgender, and some of us don't identify with any gender. So we have a lot to teach, you know, as a community to the cishet world, who really does want to serve us. And so that's what Equally Wed Pro is all about. It's an educational platform. We have the signature course, and then we have other mini courses as well. And then I do a lot of speaking on stages around the world, just trying to help elevate the wedding industry. And selfishly, it's really just about making things just a safer place for my LGBTQ plus community.
Well, first of all, thank you for everything you've done. I mean, I've never gotten married myself, but I know that you'd be my resource if I ever did. But, you know, I think that a lot of women don't understand, a lot of straight women who may not have a lesbian buddy may not understand exactly what you said. Think about the fact that since you were 10 years old, you know, and imagining your wedding, and you're in high school, and you buy all these, you know, journals and magazines and everything, and you watch these romance channels and watch these romance movies and everything, people like Kirsten and myself would have to imagine a different scenario watching this very heterosexual thing. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people who aren't a part of a group that is excluded consistently, and like you said, people send Bible verses where religion is used as a weapon against us consistently. You know, I think people don't realize the struggle that is and the insecurity that could bring about. And, you know, so for those who even today, because I mean, this was happening before gay marriage was legal, right? Like federally legal. And so that's, you were on the forefront of getting these people to understand there's a whole community out there. And I know that the economic impact of gay marriages had a lot to do with that decision to, you know, for, you know, the push for us to be able to get legally married. But explain to people who today say, well, what's the big deal? I don't get it. Like, I don't understand why you have to like tell about you being gay. Who cares who you're with? I don't care. Why you got to shove it in my face?
Right. Yeah. Why do you have to put it in my face is a resounding chorus from people who don't want to hear about it. Like, why do we have to hear about your sexual preference? You know, and it's not a sexual preference. It's not a, you know, I have an aversion to the word prefer because essentially, you know, we are born with our gender identity and we are born with our sexual orientation and it is assigned to us. We have no choice in the matter. And when you're growing up with this, you know, with this difference from society, it's very isolating sometimes especially if you don't have a network, especially if your family thinks otherwise, you know, and if your family doesn't understand, it usually comes, you know, I think that a lot of hate comes from just not understanding. And so it's hard. It's hard to, you know, get along in the world. It's, you know, worrying if someone's going to like you or not, if you bring up your partner, you know, worrying that someone's going to, you know, a relative may say, when are you going to get a boyfriend? And you're secretly thinking, I already have a girlfriend and I can't tell you, grandma, you know, I mean, there's, you know, it, but the reason that we are so out and proud, that we have pride, and pride is, you know, a multi-level story. But one of the reasons why we celebrate who we are so loudly and share who we are is to normalize the fact that we are LGBTQ+, and that it's okay to be LGBTQ+, because other people are watching. Some people who are LGBTQ+ and are not yet ready to share that with the world, they're watching and they are going to feel safer. We have really high rates of suicide in our community. And so it's that's one reason why we share who we are. But also one of the reasons why I believe why we were able to pass marriage equality is because the number of our allies grew year after year after year. When we launched Equally Wed, we had 6 states that afforded marriage equality in 2010. And as we covered marriage equality throughout the years, the number, according to the Pew Research Center, the number of allies that we had supporting marriage equality went from 30% to about I think like 68%, which also, if you're paying attention there on the math, that means that a quarter, almost a little bit more than a quarter of our country still is against us being able to have our marriages legally recognized, even though we already do. So that's unfortunate. But we tell our stories and we show our love and not necessarily, it's not the one of our fights for equality was marriage equality, but it also is in relation to so many other things. You know, currently we finally are able to not get fired for being LGBTQ+ in every single state in the United States, but we still can get kicked out of our housing. And I can't even guess the number, but I think it's over 20 states where we can currently get kicked out if our landlord finds out that we're LGBTQ+. So the more we talk about who we are, who we love, how we identify, the more we normalize it, and the more likely we're going to grow in allyship, and people are going to vote for politicians who believe that we are no longer should be treated like second-class citizens. That, you know, if Maria and I are traveling and we break down in a rural area, that we go into a hospital room because one of us is sick, then the other one can be admitted, you know, as a visitor there. If they say, oh, only, you know, only immediate family. We now with marriage equality, I can say I am immediate family. And we do still carry all the documents that our lawyer prepared for us to prove that we are family and that we have the legal right to be there. But if we didn't talk about ourselves, those rights, I don't think we'd get there. You know, I don't think we would have gotten there. And also, you know, there's just so much that goes on outside of, you know, the political realm, like bullying in high school and bullying at work and harassment. If we didn't normalize being LGBTQ+, then that keeps us in the closet, so to say. And it makes it easier for people who are homophobic and transphobic, to hurt us. So we got to talk about it.
Yeah. And just to jump in really quickly, you know, when I got my kidney transplant, one of the times I was admitted in the hospital, my girlfriend had to pose as my sister so that she could be in the room with me, because the hospital would not have allowed her to spend the night had that not happened. And then I knew someone who worked for the state of Georgia and got let go because they purposely went into his computer to find evidence that he was gay and then escorted him out the next day once they found that evidence. And this was back before, you know, before that federal law. So, I mean, there, when people are fighting for their rights, regardless of who they are, what group they're a part of, you know, people just have to give them the benefit of the doubt that there's a reason they're out there marching. There's a reason they're shouting. There's a reason they're trying to get rights, because their lives that you don't know about is hard, you know, and there's things that are unfair that need to be resolved.
Absolutely.
And I think these stories are so essential because, Kirsten, as much as I can tell, this is your passion. You are devoted to this purpose in your life. This must also play out for you personally. Does this passion for the LGBTQ plus community put more pressure on your marriage and your relationship? Do you feel a personal responsibility for it to work and be a model?
Oh, now I do. Thanks a lot, Tim. No, I think that, actually, no, I never connected the two. Maria and I launched Equally Wed together, and we run it together in Equally Wed Pro. So I think it just made us, it's more connected because.
But you're a couple, right? You're a normal couple.
We're a normal couple.
Normal married couples are going to not get along. You're going to have a spat in the middle of the grocery store aisle, you know, just like I would with my husband. You're going to have regular things. I just wondered if personally it plays out like, gosh, we have to be like even a more outstanding, perfectly married couple because people are watching you and they have this microscope on your relationship.
Yeah.
No pressure.
I'm sorry. We're going to go and have a fight right now. I've actually been really open about, you know, I mean, we get along pretty great, but I have shared in Equally Wed essays, about not major struggles or anything, but just that, you know, how to get along every year, you know, because marriage isn't always easy. So, one of the things that I've been doing in my writing for more than 20 years is just being really vulnerable and telling the truth. So I don't feel that pressure. I feel pressure to keep it going, you know, even when it's not as profitable as, say, a straight-owned media company, when maybe advertisers aren't always willing to take a risk with us. I do feel pressure to make it work because I get so many letters, not just from LGBTQ plus couples saying thank you, and vendors saying thank you for this resource, but I get a lot of emails from parents and siblings that are just really heartfelt saying, one of the main things is, thank you for showing me what their love and their future could look like. I never imagined it for my, you know, my brother, my daughter. And then we've also, you know, expanded into family coverage, you know, expanding your family through, you know, surrogacy or IVF or IUI or adoption and fostering. And it's just, it's really emotional for our readers and for us. And that's one highlight of it, you know, that I get to have the privilege of sharing these stories. As you two know, you know, sharing other people's stories is a real privilege.
Well, and it goes back to what you said about misunderstanding, right? The family members are worried that the gay members of their family aren't going to have the future they have, but by them being prejudiced against them is what is keeping them from having the future they want them to have, right?
You nailed it. Yeah.
They're contributing to it, even though they're concerned about it.
Right. When my, when I came out at 19, well, when my mother outed me to my whole family, I came out to my mom. My dad's main concern was that I wasn't going to be able to get married and have children. And he was really, really supportive of me coming out. But he was really worried that I wasn't going to have those things. And he was the opposite of prejudice. He just didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm, right. Yeah, totally. And, you know, for the frenzy, we are talking to women over 40. We are celebrating this stage of life and our age and embracing all of our years. So a lot of the women in our audience are going to be helping their children plan weddings. Mm-hmm. So talk to maybe a straight mom who's got gay kids who are ready to get married now, whether that's, you know, men or women or non-binary children. What kind of encouragement can you give them, or maybe guidance on what to say, what not to say, how to help them plan?
I think the number one priority has to be your focus is celebrating their love and figuring out what that looks like, what their love story looks like, and not necessarily mirroring everything that you're seeing on Pinterest in the magazines. The beauty of an LGBTQ plus wedding is that we don't have to keep any of the traditions that we don't want to from the cishet community. You know, if we want to both carry bouquets or carry a bouquet and wear a boutonniere or walk in together or enter in from the sides or come flying in on a chandelier, we can do those things because we're queer. You know, like we get to do things that aren't expected of us from the cishet community. However, a lot of us do want a lot of those traditional trappings, and that's okay too. What I hear from a lot of couples, and you know, we heard it a little bit in our own families, is the expectation to adhere to what has always been done. So in the lesbian community, there are a variety of gender expressions and styles. And Melissa's laughing. But some women, you know, stopped wearing dresses as soon as they were allowed to, you know, stuff them in a drawer and start just wearing pants. And then their families sometimes expect them that they're going to wear this ball gown on their wedding day when that's not true to who they are. Mm-hmm. So I think continually encouraging your children, even if your children are 25 or 30, they're still your babies, but encouraging them to be their best self on their wedding day, not your version of themselves, is, I think, where to start. And then obviously, you know, helping them navigate finding LGBTQ plus inclusive vendors is really important, because even today, we still have so many wedding pros who absolutely refuse to work with us, even though it's illegal. And it's hard to make those calls if you're in the LGBTQ plus community to say, will you work with me on my wedding day? So if you can do some of that research or those cold calls and that fielding, and protect your child from that emotional heartbreak on what's supposed to be one of the biggest, most happiest days of your life, then that would be an incredible service for them. Just to be, as parents are, a protector and a protective shield. Those are the main tips. And then obviously, you know, have fun. As I would tell all parents, that this is their day, not yours. So, but be involved.
Well, it's their life and not yours too. Cause sometimes I think parents are worried about their own reputations more so than their child's reputation, when it comes to coming out. But you know, the other thing, just quickly, I was watching some documentary because I'm a history buff, but it was interesting to me in a documentary a few years ago about Queen Victoria, about how a lot of our, you know, heterosexual traditional wedding stuff comes from Queen Victoria. Like, there is a history to how straight weddings are conducted. And so, like you said, it's just, we get in such a habit after several generations, it is just what it is, where those traditions have a beginning somewhere. Somebody said, this is how it should be. And so everybody needs to do it this way. And so I just think people need to relax a little bit, not be so rigid in their traditions, and understand this is an opportunity for, like you said, something unique and something that is branded to that specific family, which can be special for everybody if you allow it to be.
Absolutely. And create your own traditions. I love Anne Lamott is one of my favorite writers. And one of her quotes is, shoulds are shit. And,
so good. You know,
we should do this. We should do that. But no, for me, the only rule I have for weddings is that you write your thank you notes. That's it.
Nice. I love that rule. Now, Kirsten, is there a way for wedding vendors to publicly display that they are accepting of LGBTQ plus couples?
Yes, that is a great question, Jen. So a lot of folks think that what's in their heart is good enough, you know, but if you have the cutest smile in your avatar, if you're a one-person band, you know, in terms of your business, that's not going to attract LGBTQ plus people because we don't know that you could be the safest person in the world if you are white, straight, and Christian. But other than that, maybe you won't accept us. So we need to see it. You need to be loud, just as loud as we are about being LGBTQ plus. We need you to be just as loud about being a safe and welcoming place for us to do business with, that you are going to celebrate us, not merely tolerate us. I recommend everywhere that you have, everywhere that you're out as your business, you know, whether it's social media or your website, your display table at a wedding show, everywhere that you can indicate that you're LGBTQ plus inclusive. And you can start by saying you're LGBTQ plus inclusive, because inclusive on its own doesn't necessarily mean anything. When you are not afraid to say you're LGBTQ plus inclusive, that's huge. And then start using more imagery, or any imagery if you haven't it already, of LGBTQ plus couples, real LGBTQ plus couples. A lot of people put on style shoots in the wedding industry and they use straight people to pose as us. And it's so weird. It's gross and it's inauthentic, and it's not going to make the impact that you think it's going to make. Get involved with your local LGBTQ plus nonprofits. That way you're really actually putting your money where your mouth is, but you also are going to network and find more LGBTQ plus people that will lead you in a sense to more LGBTQ plus clients. Start supporting LGBTQ plus owned businesses. There are some fantastic LGBTQ plus wedding pros who are working really hard to help change the industry as well. And if you start following them, interacting with them, you are going to grow your network and be more known as LGBTQ plus inclusive. But it really comes down to, when someone is coming to your social media, if they're looking at your bio really quickly, if they're looking at your website really quickly, are they going to see themselves in what you say? What are they going to, you know, and it goes for a lot of underrepresented communities. If you have all skinny people in your feed or your website, where are the curvy people going to fit in? Or if you don't have differently abled people, or you only have white people, or you only have another race, you know, these are important things to consider. Like, is everybody going to feel welcome? Is everybody going to feel welcome at our business? And for the LGBTQ plus community, who have historically been excluded, especially from weddings, we need to see it front and center. And what's beautiful here is that for the longest time, people still are, you know, especially in conservative communities, are nervous about coming out as an ally. But really, what's good for the community is also good for your business. Inclusivity is a rising matter of importance, and it is really important to the Gen Z community and to the younger millennials. Mm-hmm. So even if the person who's on your site or your social media isn't, they don't identify themselves as LGBTQ plus, because more people are coming out, we are seeing our allies being more aware of how we are discriminated against or excluded. So there is a better chance of other people swiping left, right, whatever, and passing you by and going to work with a more LGBTQ plus inclusive business, even if they don't themselves identify as LGBTQ plus.
Yeah. I mean, and don't mistake yourself with the assumption that rural people aren't gay. I mean, that.
Right. We're everywhere.
I mean, right. Right. That's the reason I moved to Atlanta. I mean, the reason that the cities have so many out LGBT people is more than likely they escaped a rural community. So you could be the business in your rural community that keeps your community together. Mm-hmm. Right. And just, and like you said, the upcoming generation has a different mentality about this than the generation that's aging. So.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It's so important. And also, you could have an LGBTQ plus member on your staff, and they are not going to feel safe coming out if you are not out about being inclusive.
I love everything that you're doing. I've learned so much already, Kirsten. Thank you so much. Now, we have a section called the Frenzy Five. It's five quick rapid fire questions that we're going to ask you here in just a minute. But I did want to make sure that we were able to tell everybody about SurvivorLit.org. Can you explain this new project that you've launched?
Sure. Thank you. So SurvivorLit is something that I've been dreaming of for a very long time. I am a sexual assault survivor, and I wanted to create a space that is safe and welcoming and a community for other sexual assault survivors to come in, share their stories, read other people's stories, and essentially feel less alone. So it's an online literary magazine. It's a nonprofit. I launched it in September 2020. And it's a safe space. And it's for everybody who is a sexual assault survivor. And the goal is not only to give people a place to share their stories, but also to do what Carrie Fisher said, to take your broken heart and turn it into art. So we are there to teach people how to craft their stories, how to share a body of work with something that happened to their body and that is still held in their body. The body holds all the trauma, and we're not there to teach people like necessarily how to get through it in a medical way, but just teaching them there how to be with a community of survivors, of people who understand you.
Well, almost give them permission to heal.
Incredible.
Right.
Yeah. Incredible. Okay, Kirsten, here is the Frenzy Five. No pressure, just little rapid fire questions to get to know you better. Okay. Number one, where is your cozy, happy place?
Oh, on the couch with my family.
I love that. Number two, what's your favorite framed thing in your home?
Okay. No offense to my family, but I have a framed article of being in the New York Times print.
Awesome. Okay. You got to tell me more about the article.
Well, really quickly, when we launched Equally Wed out of our home in Georgia, where marriage was not legally recognized, they sent a reporter to do a feature on us about Equally Wed. So it's a very long feature, and it's really nice going into what we were doing, why we were doing, and kind of like what gave us the nerve to do it when we didn't actually have legally recognized marriages. So it was nice.
Such a pioneer. I'm so glad they recognize that. I love it. Okay. Number three, what's your most memorable birthday?
That's a hard one there. I would say my 40th. Friends came from people who I see now, but people who I haven't seen in a few years. My wife threw me a surprise party, and my aunt and uncle came up from Florida. It was just incredible just to be with everybody and celebrate that milestone.
Did they actually pull off the surprise, or did you know?
Okay, so they did. One, I am really naive, and also I am pretty deaf. And so apparently all my friends were being really loud in the house, and they were certain that I was hearing them as I was approaching the door with one of my friends. But no, I had no clue. And I walked in and broke into tears.
Oh, true surprises are the best. Those are just some of those life moments you'll never forget.
Yes.
Okay. Number four, what's a daily routine or ritual you stick to?
When I start my day, I have a Tibetan singing bowl, and I start my day here and just to center myself every day. So it just doesn't feel so frantic.
Can I hear it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And I'm no professional. That's it. There's a lot more you can do with the bowl, but I'm not good at it yet.
And that just starts you back at square one.
Mm-hmm. Just a place of peace.
I love that so much. Oh my gosh. That is the coolest answer that we've ever had on the Frenzy. Aww. Okay. And number five, what fashion trend did you jump on? Any of them? Like you can go back to the 80s, any fashion trend you were like, oh, that's me.
Oh, okay. I also want to follow it up with the one I regret the most,
yes.
But I was really, really into wearing tan pantyhose with my cutoff jean shorts and kids.
Yes. I love that you just admitted that. Yeah. Fantastic.
Nobody's arms even matched their legs. It was ridiculous. we all had the, sun color.
That's amazing. I love it so much. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us. Y'all can follow Kirsten Palladino at Kirsten Palladino on Instagram and at Equally Wed. they can find you through either one. You can also head over to equallywed.com and survivorlit.org. Thank you so much for your passion, for all you're doing to make the world a better place. I mean, you are at it every day. And I know that that takes a lot of commitment and daily energy to devote to other people, but you're using your life in service. And I just want to say thank you.
Thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate it and the opportunity to share what I'm doing and connect with you.
This has been awesome. Yay!
Yay, thank you.
Now it's time to grab a question out of the You Don't Know My Life box. And Jen, today's question is, what is something that you used to believe but don't anymore? Kind of along the same lines of people thinking that gay marriage was wrong and now they think it's right. And it could be silly or it could be serious.
Okay, well, for a long time, this is silly. For a long time in my childhood, I believed I was going to go on a date with Michael Jackson. It was a dream that I knew I was going to realize when I became an adult.
Yeah.
I'm a child of the 80s. It's when Michael Jackson Thriller was at the top of it. And I just was obsessed. And I thought it was a belief in my heart. And my little tiny heart that my crush on him would develop in a way that would somehow the universe would bring us together and I would go on a date with him. I no longer believe that for a million reasons.
Right.
We don't even have to go into all of them.
That's right. We'll leave the innocence to the innocent, right?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, that was my real belief.
But back in the day. No, that makes sense. That's cute. That's so cute. So how old were you then?
I was probably in second or third grade.
I was about the age. He probably would have gone out with you then. All right. So
why did I think of that joke before? That's so good. Right. You're right, Melissa. You're right.
So
I was a girl and maybe not.
So right. Along those lines, yeah, this is it just made me think of something I said to my mom when I was little. And I truly believe this because I don't know. Because now if a kid said this to their mother, there would probably be a question of whether they're transgender. Okay.
Okay.
But I think mine was less about that and more about the power I already saw in the family, in the world. I thought I wanted to be a boy. I wanted to be a boy when I was probably around my son's age. And I think it's because it had more to do with my father. Like my father was a very powerful man and he was very charismatic. And it's not that I didn't want to be like my mom, but at the time for some reason, I remember telling my mom, can I not wear a shirt like dad doesn't wear a shirt outside? And she said, no, you have to put a shirt on. And so I realized there were restrictions that girls had to have that boys didn't have. And so I believed that my penis was going to just show up.
That you'd be able to pee outside.
That I was going to be a boy. I was a boy. I was a boy. The penis was going to just show that it grows on. You're not born with it. And I think I tried to tell my mother that penises so grow on their own and just show up. And she's like, no, honey, you're born, you know, you're born with it. And I'm like, but I don't have one, but it's coming, right? Like it. So I tried to negotiate with my mother that I wanted to be a boy instead of a girl.
Cute.
Maybe that was a clue for her, you know, as I grew older, because Mr. Carter has never tried to negotiate with me whether he's a girl or not. And, and I don't know in a different time whether that would have been something that but I just remember I really believe that a penis came later.
And how long did that last? How long
not
was that
long,
phase?
Not long. That was within a year. I mean, it was, you know, but I thought back on it like, because I don't have that thought or desire. I didn't have that thought or desire after that. So when puberty and beyond everything, I am a woman and I'm happy in my body as a woman. Mm-hmm. But there for a moment, I really thought that penises, you weren't born with it. I don't know if I've ever told anybody that story.
That's so funny. I love it.
It's true.
I just thought of another belief that I used to have that I don't have anymore. And this one would be more serious. I used to believe that people were either straight or gay. But I think there's a lot of people that are somewhere on a continuum. So my belief now is that there's like not just one or the other.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. It's called the Kinsey scale. I think Kinsey, I don't know if you ever, there's a movie that,
That can't sounds think of familiar.
The actor right now, but there is a thing, such a thing called the Kinsey scale that determines sexuality. And the idea is that most people fall in I ping on one end. A lot of people ping on the other, but most people fall in the middle. And I do think that society, I think society has a lot to do with that, because I think mm-hmm. there's so much shame. If there wasn't so much shame surrounding sexuality on so many levels, straight or gay, if sexuality was just seen as something is this the same as eating dinner, you know, like you got to eat, you got to have sex, you got to exercise, you got to, you know, like there's things as a human you need to do in order to be happy and thrive. If it was just seen as nothing important, I am curious what partners people would have,
mm-hmm.
what curiosities that they would, because I've known several men who facing society are as straight as an arrow. And I still believe they're straight as an arrow, but they've confessed to me about the curiosities they had like in college or their 20s, and they tried it out and realized they didn't like it, but they could never admit to trying it mm-hmm. out, because especially with men, if you try it one time, then you're gay, right? Mm-hmm. And that you can never live that down. And I think that's unfortunate, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, so to your point, yes, I think that you're right. That I think we put a lot of sexuality just in general is an odd thing for Americans, especially to deal with. We don't know. We're very uncomfortable by the topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just a belief that has changed for me over time that everybody's not just like one or other. There's a big continuum, and it's all gray, and it's all good.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's all gray.
And it's all good. All right. Yes. Melissa Carter has this week's mirror mantra for you.
Yes, I do. I feel that, you know, with these questions about sexuality that we've talked about, by the questions that surround us about different topics in our world, that there seems to be not only a pressure to feel a certain way, but also I think we're weary from the past year and a half to where we're confused, we're upset, we're tired, we're in a fog, really. At least I know that's how I feel. And so my mantra for this week is I'm going to stop disappointing myself. That we're so self-critical that from now on, it's not so much about not criticizing myself, but it's also trusting my wisdom more. And so going further with that, I'm going to stop disappointing myself. Make your time more efficient by trusting your wisdom more. You know, we talk to a group of people who are a collection of experience and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And you are more knowledgeable now than you've ever been in your life. And the beauty of getting older is you will only become more wise. You will only have more experiences. You will only have more things to draw from in order to make conclusions.
And there's a lot of hope and comfort in that.
Absolutely. Like I think that we are taught to mourn the loss of our bodies so much that we forget the other part of ourselves, which is the mm-hmm. internal part of ourselves that are wise, understanding, empathetic, and also don't take no shit. And so, I mean,
I love it when you cuss, Melissa Carter.
I know I can cuss on
makes
this.
Makes me feel like a rebel.
No, but I am so.
But just don't say the F-A-R-T word.
I know.
You?
I toot. Okay, toot. I know. Toot. Exactly. That F word I could say, you know, the other F word I could say.
The other F word, let it fly. But the F-A-R-T one, it's going to offend me a lot. Sorry. I digress.
Hilarious. So I think that, you know, I'm going to stop disappointing myself means that you don't give yourself reason to criticize. You are going to speak your voice now. You are going to use your wisdom now. You are going to tell people how you feel now. You're going to share your story now. Like the reasons that we usually criticize ourselves is because, I should have known better. I should have said this. I should have done that. I should have followed my gut. I should have followed my instinct. I should have told them how I felt. I should have done. Well, then just do it. We're at the age where you just do it. You say what you feel. You do what you want to do. You don't sacrifice for everybody else at the expense of yourself. You go on that vacation you want to go on. You write that book you want to write. You call that friend. You ask that guy out or that girl out that you've been wanting to. You just do it. And then you stop criticizing yourself and you stop feel, you know, you just stop the process that you've been doing for decades. This is the age and the time to really live the life that you've been, that you're meant to live, that you've wanted to live.
Awesome. All right. Is there a friend of yours who would enjoy this episode? Please share this with her. Here's how you do it. Okay. Because we always say share this episode. Well, on Apple Podcasts, which is where most of our audience is listening.
Yeah.
Look for those three little tiny dots at the top right corner. Okay. You click on those and then there's a drop down menu. You'll select share episode and then how you want to share it will pop up. So you can select the green messages option and then it texts it to your friend. So if there is a friend who needs to learn about Equally Wed or hear this message from Melissa and I, please go ahead and share that with her. We would love it.
Yeah. And check out our friends' YouTube channel with videos and extended interviews and sign up for our weekly email. We send an episode with it into your inbox. We make it very easy for you. We include links to things we discuss. We give you some deeper insights to these topics. So all you got to do is go to thefrenzy.com and sign up today.
And thanks to our new listeners who have just subscribed to our email list, Patricia Hayden, Alisa Kincaid, and Annalise McGraw. Thank you so much. We love that you're part of the Frenzy Tribe.
Yeah. And again, they don't know that we're saying that. I mean, I'm glad you're surprised and smiling and happy. Mm-hmm. We pay attention. So thank you for doing that. The Frenzy, produced and hosted by me, Melissa Carter, and her, Jen Hobby.
Sound editing by our buddy, Bo Johnson.
Original soundtrack produced by Tammy Hurt for Placement Music, written and recorded by Mark Daniels.
The Frenzy celebrates friendships over 40. So thank you so much for spending time with us today. We absolutely love your friendship.
All right. Until next week. Rest your gut,
share your story,
and stop lying about your age. See you next week.
Bye, y'all.